Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with veteran jazz trumpeter and flugelhornist Larry Douglas. We had a good talk on January 12, 2022 about the release of his new CD with the Zoltan called Dedications. These days he's in Atlanta, but he ruled as one of San Francisco's top trumpet and flugelhorn players for more than three decades. He is a mentor and a father to five children, and each of them followed in his musical footsteps. His soul and story is something you should hear about. Enjoy.
Hey, man, thanks for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz. I appreciate it.
Hey, man, thank you for giving me the opportunity to at least, hey, just talk about this project, you know?
Absolutely, my pleasure. You know, and I guess that's the thing about what's going on with creative projects, the backdrop of this undulating COVID madness that's happening on planet Earth. You have this Altet CD, Dedications. How does it feel to get music out into the world right now when we probably need it more than ever?
For me, this is a spiritual endeavor because it is a means to an end. This is a trilogy. This is a series that has lasted over 36 years. My son, who turned 50 2 years ago, right before COVID hit, it was my plan to do the third album, the third CD, which would end the trilogy. Now, to answer your question, with all of the COVID-related deaths, especially with parents losing their kids, basically that's what Dedication was all about. You know, that suffering, that grieving process, that parents, the cry that's universal, you know, when one loses a child. And it's really special because hopefully I have a captive audience.
Altet, that's a lot of cats in a band.
It is. You know, I gave you 36 years of grieving in what, a minute and 63 seconds?
What are you hoping the listener ultimately gets out of it? I understand kind of the backdrop, but ultimately, when they put this music on and they feel it, what do you want them to get?
I want them to feel the sincerity that universal death, global death, is very, very passionate to me, and passionate and compassionate, and also it is internalized because a lost man, there is no greater feeling of despair. In Dedications, I want them to hear that even in that despair, there's still energy. There is focus. There is direction.
Well, and the embodiment of music is healing in itself.
Exactly. It's the dilemma of the human condition, you know, and I have an outlet. There are parents that do not have an outlet, that cannot do what I can do globally, especially with this thing called music, because it is a universal language. So I can at least speak to the universe.
You've been at this for a long time in the world of jazz, and I'm wondering, how did this all begin for you? Talk to me a little bit about your childhood influences and how jazz became your passion.
Well, I was probably carried in my mom's stomach from church to church every Sunday. She was a pianist. And literally every Sunday she would be at a different site. And from the time that I was her shotgun rider, when she would go out, I would notice how the congregation would always, by the time she walked from the church to the car, everyone in that congregation would have touched her. And I didn't understand what that meant until later in my life, the gift that she was bringing. That would be the ancestral gift. The inspirational gift would be from my brothers, who formed a band in high school. Gary, Donald, and Melvin. And as a little kid, I would want to interact with them and I was like that little fly on the wall that you keep swatting and get out of the way. Mm-hmm. We're busy. Mm-hmm. But the connection, the spirit of bringing joy and happiness to someone that has no outlet, I would say that was probably the most inspirational. And I even followed my eldest brother to the same university that he attended, and we both majored in music.
What was the first live jazz show you ever saw that really blew you away?
The first live jazz show would have been my brother with Claude Ray. Claude Ray was an organist. And during the time of the B3 era, the mid-60s, or the 60s through 70s, or even the mid-50s, or late 50s through early 60s, the B3 craze with McGriff, Jimmy Smith, just watching them really opened up a new horizon for me.
So talk to me a little bit about how you began. How did this journey professionally begin on stage for you?
I was probably at 12 years old. I played my first gig. I was 11 or 12 years old. My band director took me out and a friend of mine, and that started the journey. That was the sound trail. That was the first gig trail. What I was doing, but during that time, Booker T, Green Onion, that was a big thing when I started cutting my teeth, you know?
You're a mentor and father to five children. And, you know, I think about the effect of being a mentor to your children would be. What about you? Who were some mentors on your path and your educational path and professional path that have been huge for you in your life?
My educational path and my inspirational path would have been my high school band director, J.W. Blakely, and my brother, Gary. Both attended Florida A&M University, which I later attended. Blakely came in my life real late, but he brought a California flair when he came in. He was an alto player. Gary was a trumpet player and drummer. And both were both were educators. To answer that question, there were several band directors that I was able to interact and perform with, you know, around the little, excuse me, whatever the local children's circuit was. And believe me, man, I have played in some matchbox, sitting there, chicken plates, grease, popping on it while we play it. And a little place, little matchbox just swinging back and forth, you know.
You've been in San Francisco for 3 decades plus playing music. What is it like out in San Francisco? What do you love so much about San Francisco?
I was able to be who I wanted to be. My sound trail in San Francisco probably will move through several genres of music. I was never stuck in one genre. And FYI, initially when I did the project Dedications, I wrote an article to introduce the project, and it was published in Downbeat. And the concept of what I do, if there's a subgenre, that subgenre would be sound painting. Sound painting then would have been shortened to SOPA, S-O-P-A. And if you know your music history, both of those are the dominant chords of Eastern music and Western music, soul and pa. So, which gives me the opportunity to do whatever I choose to do and bring the same passion into whatever I'm performing, whether it was with Dr. Carl Hester doing literally a free type of music, or Johnny Otis doing the jump band era, or the music that I've created. Sophie.
Over your career, you've done a lot of things. There's been a lot of action. What are you the proudest of? What is it that you kind of sit back and think about in your career that you're really, really happy to see happen?
What I'm really happy to see is that I was never stuck in one genre. The horizon was always in front of me, and I never looked back. I don't look back, because the thing about music, it is ever-ending, it is ever-evolving. And if you don't evolve with it, you get stuck in that area. I'm not saying that that's not bad, to get stuck in a package. Well, I will have to say, I'm sorry, I have to go back to one of the questions that you asked about inspiration and mentor. I would say Miles Davis, because he never looked back. He always kept his eyes forward, and no matter how people chose to look at him, what he was and how he was moving, it didn't bother him, because it was all about creativity.
Actually, I have one son. His name is Miles, so I get it for sure.
okay. All right, Joe.
That's right. Miles Domino, my man. So, you know, you get the chance to wake up every day and perform and to make music. This is your life. What do you like the best about being a professional musician?
It's that I can touch people when they're coming in to a performance that I'm performing, and I can read. I like to read the audience, and I like to find that one person who had an extremely difficult day. Their despair, their absolute disenchantment with their life, and play to that person personally, even though in a crowd of a thousand, be able to pick that one person out. And when that one person leaves the performance, that one person will walk up to me or walk up to you and say, thank you. That means more to me than making $1 billion. Excuse the expression. Now, wait a minute, I'm gonna roll that back. But anyway, you understand.
I dig it. You know, of all the modern musicians that are out there in the world right now, is there anybody that you'd like to see? Is there any musician you would love to see live that you haven't seen live in the realm of jazz?
No one. I am my biggest competitor. I am my biggest opposition. And Miles, Clifford, and Lee. That's my circle of three trumpet players. And they stayed in my head for so long until I could not find my voice. And the only way that I could find my voice is separate from them. But carry their foundation. There's nobody out there that I see today. And I am not taking away from the extreme virtuosos that are out there, the extreme gifted players that are out there. But it's just, I mean, you know, there's no one that I really care to see. And that's just my, I don't want to say this, that's my safe place. My next project, I'm going to play trombone. I'm going to play vibraphone. I'm going to play flute. I'm working on the alto flute now. I'm going to play my trumpet and flugelhorn. I don't want to be confused in what I'm doing. And going out there and listening to other people, it will confuse you. I'm not going to play like Herbert Loss. I'm not going to play trombone like J.J. Johnson. I'm not going to play vibes like Bobby Hunt. God, I can't even think of of Hutchinson's Bobby Hutchinson. But I play me.
So speaking of you, everyone has a perception of you, an idea of who they think you are, your family, your friends, your fans, but ultimately you live your life. You have a perception of you. Who do you think you are?
I'm the one that you don't want to talk to. I say it like that, man. I'm the one that you just look at and you just say, wow. I love that because I live my life with that shield. If you want to know me, talk to me. Don't prejudge me.
The irony of that answer is that was my last question, and we just talked. We just had an interview, so we we did it. I really appreciate you opening up about the new material, about your life and music. Thank you for talking to Neon Jazz. I really appreciate it.
Joe, I hope you got some information. I hope I did well.
I did. Are you kidding? I got a whole lot of information.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest cats in Atlanta, San Francisco, Kansas City, and spots all over the world giving fans all that jazz. Thanks to Larry for his time, energy, and cool. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to theneonjazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.